The Apostle Paul, in his last communication with his beloved son in the faith, Timothy, says, "For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." But in rehearsing the events that we have been considering this week in Deuteronomy, he exhorts the Hebrews, "Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached as well as unto them. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it." The fear did not go on to produce faith or love, only terror. Have you ever been terrified? I'm not speaking of being afraid, but being in terror. If all of a sudden here this morning, instead of the bright sunshine that we have, we see the sun beginning to dim, and it becomes darker and darker, and finally, as Moses describes it, black darkness. And then all around us are vivid forks of lightning and loud claps of thunder. And the mountain over there that we're pitched at the very base of, all of a sudden begins to quake and to tremble. And it breaks out into fire. There's nothing to burn, it's just stone. But it burns anyway. And as we sit here observing it, you hear a trumpet in the background waxing louder and louder. And then dead silence. And then, as Moses describes it, you hear a great voice out of the midst of the fire, out of the mountain, saying, "I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Thou shalt have none other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above or that is in the earth beneath. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. For the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain." And he goes on with the other 10, and then dead silence. In discussing this, the writer to the Hebrew in chapter 12, verse 21 says, "And so terrible was the sight that Moses said, I exceedingly fear and quake." In the chapter we took earlier in the week, Deuteronomy chapter 5, Moses rehearsed the scene. In verse 22, "These words the Lord spake unto all your assembly in the mount, out of the midst of the fire of the cloud, and out of the thick darkness, with a great voice, and he added no more. And it came to pass, when ye heard the voice out of the midst of the darkness, for the mountain did burn with fire, that ye came near unto me, even all the heads of your tribes and your elders. And ye said, Behold, the Lord our God hath showed us his glory and his greatness, and we have heard his voice out of the midst of the fire. Now therefore, why should we die? For this great fire will consume us. If we hear the voice of the Lord our God any more, then we shall die. For who is there of all flesh that hath heard the voice of the living God speaking out of the midst of the fire and has lived? Go thou near and hear all that the Lord our God shall say, and speak thou unto us all that the Lord our God shall speak unto thee, and we will hear it and do it. But let not God speak to us anymore. We got away with it that time, but I never want to go through that again. And so Moses, as their mediator, records, I stood between the Lord and you at that time to show you the words of the Lord, for you were afraid by reason of the fire. So Moses talks with God and tells God that Israel does not want him to speak with them anymore. And then Moses brings God's reply back to the people. And that's the verse that our brother read. According to all that thou desirest of the Lord thy God, saying, let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, neither let me see this great fire any more, that I die not. The Lord said unto me, they have well spoken that which they have spoken. I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren like unto thee. And I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. But brethren and sisters, as with any agreement, there's always two sides. God says, fine, I'll do it your way. I'll do it the way you want me to. I will no longer speak with them. However, he says, it shall come to pass that whosoever will not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name, I will require it of him. I will condescend. I will do it your way. I will send a man that'll be just like Moses. However, I will not accept any excuse for not obeying him. If you don't obey him, I will require it of you. How was Christ a prophet and a mediator like unto Moses? Just listen to the words, the testimony that God himself paid Moses. Who beside Christ would God say, hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision, and I will speak to him in a dream. My servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all my house. With him will I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. And after his death, the book of Deuteronomy ends with this divine conclusion. And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, in all the signs and the wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and to his servants, and to all his land, and to all that mighty hand, and all that great terror which Moses showed in the sight of all Israel. When we review the life of Moses, we see the Spirit of Christ, which was in him, displayed over and over again. And it is fitting because Christ was to be like unto Moses. Both Moses and Christ were born of poor Jews. Both were born under the sentence of death because of the wrath of a Gentile king, the Pharaoh and Herod. Both were delivered by God's extraordinary providence in order that they might deliver the people of God out of bondage. One from the bondage of Egypt, and the other from the ultimate taskmaster, slave master, the bondage of sin and death. The character of Moses was that of Christ. We read, And Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses, and they said, hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us? and the Lord heard it. And then there's a parenthetical. Now the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. We read of Moses being the subject of criticisms and murmurings on 10 different occasions. Moses, like Christ, was very meek, but he was not weak. Meekness is a sign of strength. Under provocation, he was as a deaf man, and he heard not. However, when God's honor was at stake, as in the case of the golden calf, we see nobody more zealous, more forceful than the man Moses. But when his own honor was involved, no man was meeker. Bold as a lion in the case of God, meek as a lamb in his own case. And brethren and sisters, we meet here for self-examination, to look at our own characters before we partake of these emblems. How many of us would respond just the opposite as Moses and Christ responded? Do we respond like Moses and Christ and allow our character and our reputation to be assailed, even when accused falsely? When he was tried, we read this morning in the New Testament reading, Pilate knew that Jesus was not the terrible person that they were trying to make him out to be. He knew that the accusations against him were entirely false. And Pilate asked him again, saying, Answerest thou nothing? Behold, how many things they witness against thee. But Jesus yet answered nothing. So that, we're told, Pilate marveled greatly. Brethren and sisters, when are we going to learn that self is not important? It's not our honor that matters. We're not here to protect our honor. We're here to protect God's honor. And our honor is totally irrelevant. Christ tells us, Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. It's all in our attitude. We've got to overcome self and be a soldier for Christ. I was impressed when I was in high school when Kennedy was shot, how the Secret Service guard, as soon as he heard the shot ring out, spread himself, spread eagle over the back of the limousine. His life wasn't important. He was there to protect the president. And he immediately leaped on the back of the limousine behind President Kennedy. We can't value ourselves. We must recognize why we were here. We're here to give honor to God and not ourselves. The mediator to come, the servant like unto Moses, was accused. He was spit on, smitten with the hand, smitten with the rod, mocked, scourged, tortured, crucified. And yet as a lamb before her shearers is dumb, so opened he not his mouth. And why did he suffer these things? Why did he go through all that? For us, for his bride, so that we might have life. And why did Moses endure the first verse of that chapter that I read? And Moses and Aaron spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman. Moses' bride was a Gentile. even as we Gentiles hope to be the bride of Christ. Moses endured the shame and the suffering for her sake. Christ endured the pain and the suffering for our sake. Cannot we endure a little for his sake? The people did not want to hear God in the way that he spoke to them. It was too dreadful. It was too terrifying. And God, bearing in mind the weakness of the flesh and the failures of his people, granted their request. He did not agree that he would not speak to them, but that he would not do it in that awesome, terrifying manner. He would provide a way that they should be able to deal with and understand and relate to. He would send them a very meek and mild mouthpiece through which his words would be delivered. And as I said, there was both a promise and a threat. The way that he would reveal himself would be much easier for us to deal with as weak mortal individuals. But woe unto him that refuses to hear. And when the mediator like Moses came, Israel refused to hear. The question for us, brethren and sisters, is, do we hearken unto the words spoken by that prophet like unto Moses? Or are we also being that foolish and short-sighted as to ignore his words? We tend to water down his precepts. We find ways around the commands that are in our way, that hinder us from doing what we want to do. We come up with ways to justify that which we are doing. He that despised Moses' law died without mercy under two or three witnesses. Of how much sorer punishment suppose ye shall he be thought worthy, who hath trodden underfoot the Son of God? And it shall come to pass that whosoever will not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name, I will require it of him. When God revealed himself at Sinai, Israel did not want him to speak to them anymore in that way. It was just too dreadful, too terrifying. But when he spoke to them through his son Jesus, it was too meek, too mild, too ordinary. Mark 6. And he went out from thence and came into his own country and asked his disciples followed him. And when the Sabbath day was come, he began to teach in the synagogue. And many hearing him were astonished, saying, from whence hath this man these things? And that wisdom, and what wisdom is given, which is given unto him, that even such mighty works are wrought by his hands? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James and Joseph and Judah and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us? And they were offended at him. But Jesus said unto them, prophet is not without honor, save in his own country. It says, and he could there do no mighty works, save he laid his hands on a few sick folks and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief. It was so obvious what he was doing, what he was saying. But he was too ordinary. He was one of them. There was nothing terrifying or different that struck them. John records, "Then said some of them of Jerusalem, Is not this he whom they seek to kill? But lo, he speaketh boldly, and they say nothing to him. Do the rulers know indeed that this is the very Christ? Howbeit, we know this man from whence he is. But when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is." Then cried Jesus in the temple as he taught, saying, "Ye both know me, and ye know whence I am. And I am not come of myself, but he that sent me is true, whom ye know not. But I know him, for I am from him, and he hath sent me." Then they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him, because his hour was not come. They were impressed. They were amazed. But he was too ordinary. We can always, brethren and sisters, convince ourselves of a good reason not to do something that we really don't want to do. What excuses are you and am I making for ourselves now? Has the truth become too commonplace, not interesting or exciting enough for us to put down our stuff, for us to put down our computers and our TVs and all the other gadgets that we have, our busy life, and get out to classes and meetings and to sit down and study and do the readings? You see, he's not terrifying us. He is asking us for our love, for our devotion. Do we give him our time, our labors, our first fruits? Do we read, study, and look forward to meeting together, and like he did, meet with desire? Or do we find excuses? Or go and get it done so that we can go and do other things and get on with our busy lives? I know our lives are just too busy. And he is just not terrifying enough to us. Not terrifying enough to motivate us, is he, brethren and sisters? It is tough. We're going to have to come up with the motivation ourselves. From exhortations, from encouragement of one another, from study, out of love and appreciation for what he has done for us, for what we see displayed on the table here before us. And if we are only doing it because of fear, because of what others will say or think, then we're wasting our time anyway, and we may as well not be here. He wants our heart. He wants our love. He wants us to appreciate that which he has done for us. For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And they, brethren and sisters, can be very powerful motivators. There are many other ways that Moses and Christ were alike. They were both mediator of God's covenants. Moses, the mediator of the first covenant, and Christ of that better covenant, not written on stones, but for those that allow that to be written on the tablets of their hearts. Moses, we saw, had a very close relationship with God. And obviously, so did Christ even closer. Both had angels communicating with them. Moses wrought many mighty miracles and convinced Israel and Egypt that God had sent him to deliver them. And so it is testified of Christ in Acts chapter 2, "Ye men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God among you by miracles and wonders and signs which God did by him in the midst of you, as ye yourselves also know." And in John 7, "And many of the people believed on him and said, When Christ cometh, will he do more miracles than these which this man hath done?" Enough evidence was given so that they... No. Enough evidence is given so that we are without excuse. The Passover was instituted through Moses, freeing Israel from Egyptian slavery and darkness. We're all familiar with the Passover, with its various elements of exhortation and types and warnings, the loins girded, staff in hand, shoes on feet, the bitter herbs along with the slain lamb. Christ, in the Passover that he instituted, the one, brethren and sisters, that we have come here this morning to commemorate, shows that Moses' Passover was but a dark shadow of the greater release from bondage that was yet to come. "I am he that liveth and was dead. And behold, I am alive forevermore, and I have the keys of hell and of death." Moses, the servant of the Lord, after 40 years of faithful leadership, was told to climb Mount Nebo. He could view the land, but standing alone on the mountain, his life would be taken from him. He could not, at that time, cross over into the promised land, which he so faithfully led the children of Israel right to the edge of. And yet, brethren and sisters, it is fitting, when that mediator or that prophet, like unto Moses, was in the earth, when he took his three closest friends, Peter, James, and John, up into that high mountain, and was transfigured before them, it is fitting that those three also saw Moses standing with Christ, transfigured before them. Each inspired writer tries to explain the wonder of the change that they saw take place, and I feel each one is trying to express in words something that words cannot express. "His face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was white as the light." How bright is the sun? How white is light? "And his raiment became shining, exceedingly white as snow, so that no fuller on earth could whiten them. It became whiter than you can make anything white." "The fashion of his countenance was altered, and his raiment was white and glistening. This was the Lord in glory. This was the Son of Righteousness, clothed in the garments in which his Father always saw him." The spotless perfection of the Son of God. And Moses, standing with him, not simply present, But brethren and sisters, it says also in glory. Matthew says a cloud overshadowed them. Here is the link with the pillar of cloud by day and fire by night, which granted comfort to Israel and assurance to Moses. And they talked. Of course they would communicate. Moses and the prophets were his constant thoughts. He was able time and time again to put the rabbis, those expositors of the law, those lawyers, those people who had spent their lifetime reading and studying the law, he put them to shame when they confronted him. He was able to astonish them by lifting Moses' words higher and far beyond anything any of those scholars had imagined or dreamed possible, showing that it was them and not him that was in opposition to Moses, that Moses' words condemned them, and that the Messiah and Moses were friends and not in opposition in any way. And now they were present with him, and conversation took place about his coming death, the great antitypical sacrifice that was about to be accomplished in Jerusalem, the great Exodus. And as they talked, a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear ye him." This was designed to strengthen and comfort Jesus as he headed towards Jerusalem. But brethren and sisters, it also marks that great contrast between Moses and Christ. Moses, although faithful in all his house as a servant, yet in one crucial instance failed. Jesus would not. Moses just could not bear up under the load. He said, "And I spake unto you at that time, saying, I am not able to bear you myself alone." He just couldn't do it all. He asks, "How can I myself alone bear your cumbrances and your burdens and your strife?" Another burden bearer was needed to bear our cumbrances and burdens and strife. Moses, in his weariness, because of the load placed upon him, found that he just could not do it. And brethren and sisters, as we focus on the emblems before us, we read the words of Moses, and we realize just how great that mediator that was to come really is. "And Moses said unto the Lord, Wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant, and wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? Have I conceived all this people? Have I begotten them? That thou shouldest say unto me, Carry them in thy bosom, as a nursing father carrieth the sucking child into the land which thou swearest unto their fathers? I am not able to bear all this people alone, because it is too heavy for me. And if thou deal thus with me, kill me, I pray thee, out of hand, if I have found favor in thy sight, and let me not see my wretchedness." Here is a man pushed right to the brink. It's as much as he could take. He could take no more. Moses, as great as he was, and he was great, just could not do the job. But a mediator, like unto him, as God promised, was provided, who was able to bear the whole nation of Israel. The wonderful, the counselor, the father of the age, he was able to succeed. Isaiah 53, "All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way. And the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all." He is able to bear us alone into the promised land. It was because he was able to accomplish that which no other man could do. And we're told the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. In everything accomplished in those years of wandering that we have been considering this week, there was the imperfection of human weakness. The priesthood was in need of forgiveness. The tabernacle itself was but temporary. Moses, their leader, could not bear all their burdens. Their mediator failed to attain the land. The greatness of Moses and his work, and brethren and sisters, they were great. Far greater than we're prone to admit. And yet, as great as they were, they stood wanting and waiting for someone even greater, a greater prophet, a greater mediator, a priest from another line, a heavenly tabernacle pitched by God and not man, a greater altar, and an infinitely greater sacrifice. We have come here this morning to remember that sacrifice and that great victory of that prophet like unto Moses. And let us partake of this Passover, leaving Egypt behind and faithfully enduring the wilderness journey so that we can victoriously enter the promised land. The way has been opened for us by that mediator like unto Moses, only far superior.